Welcome back to the Jewish Futurism Lab, where we unpack Torah, tech, and tomorrow. I'm Mike Wirth, Jewish futurist, community artist, and design educator, coming to you from Crown Town, Charlotte, North Carolina. Today's episode begins in the shadow of October 7th, with a project called Hineni that brought artists together with families in the Hadera Iron region who lost loved ones that day. My own path in that project led me to one person in particular, Bar Schechter, a young father and psytrance DJ who was killed at the Nova Festival. In this episode, I'll share Bar's story and my own. Let's get into it, y'all. Welcome, friends. And before I talk about Hineni and Bar Schechter and my own story, I need to explain where I'm coming from. A lot of Jewish people in America, Europe, and across the diaspora, you know, we have a deep connection to Israel in a really meaningful and real way. That connection might come in the form of a spiritual nature, a historical nature, or rooted in peoplehood. For me and others, there's another layer that is added on top of that. I have Israeli family. Israel was not just an idea or a place on the news. It was a part of my life as a kid here in the United States. I grew up with an Israeli step-parent and family, and that culture was woven into the background of my world. There'd be shakshuka at breakfast and steam fogging the kitchen windows. There'd be an Ofra Haza song coming from a tape, and then maybe a CD, and then later on YouTube, right, playing from the other room while family's cooking. Hebrew is happening in the background. It's on TV, it's on the radio, it's in the jokes, in the arguments, and the way that stories were told around the table. It was a part of one of my family homes in a very ordinary and very immediate way. You know, I didn't really think then of like that being Israeli culture. You know, for me, it was just part of home. I also grew up hearing about bad stuff, tragedies of things like war and conflict. And, you know, it wouldn't be a headline on the news or something like that, but as family stories, you know, sitting around the table. And I can remember one Passover in particular in the early 90s, hearing about from my uncle, my Israeli uncle, one of them, that their neighbor, who was a Holocaust survivor, was killed in one of the bus bombings a few years before, in the 1980s. I was young. I was like getting up to bar mitzvah age and, you know, hearing these things. And they weren't meant to scare me as stories. They were just, you know, I was kind of saying, hey, what's going on? You know, people were talking and somebody explained it to me in a way that I could understand. And that was the first time I'd heard the word intifada, okay, to kind of understand what that was, right, as it came to be known later, which means to shake off. And it landed not as just like a vocabulary word, but, you know, there was an intense moment, right, around the table. It came with some silence and some feelings. And I'd heard from relatives about, you know, their neighbors and coworkers and friends also who were killed in many wars, in terror attacks or by rocket or missile fire landing on their homes. These were stories told with names and faces and, you know, specific streets in Tel Aviv and other places attached to them. And October 7th, I didn't lose anyone from my own immediate circle, you know, that was that's very true. And but there isn't a single person that I can point to and say this was my relative or this was my childhood friend specifically. Okay, but in the days and the weeks after, I realized something else, that like there were at least 20 people in my life who lost somebody directly. Those were their childhood friends, their relatives, their neighbors. Okay. So, you know, friends, colleagues, family, students, community members, all these people in my orbit, you know, one by one, I started to hear them say, you know, my cousin, my friend, my neighbor, my niece, my colleague, The web of grief ran right through my life, even if the names on the lists weren't my own family or people that I knew immediately. And shortly after October 7th, once the initial shock settled in, that terrible, heavy clarity and casualties that were being accounted for, I sat in that grief with them. Phone calls, messages, long pauses. Sometimes there were no words. It was just being present, right? Just holding, supporting, loving. And this is being one step removed. You know, you're given a certain job in these times and spaces of what you're meant to do. And that's support the ones that you love, that you know are in pain. And then the Hineni Project emerged in 2024. I got an email about it. It was really heartfelt, kind of announcing the project. I was really excited. And then I had a phone call with my good friend Noah at my Jewish Federation. And he explained to me, like, man, I immediately thought of you. This is going to be great. And, you know, he it was really kind and wonderful to kind of really connect me with this. This was a really fantastic opportunity. You know, you could feel that there was a lot of care in the language of it and the way that it was being approached, and that there was a seriousness to this invitation. I took it seriously as a role, as something that I was meant to do. And I read it through once, you know, slowly, like, okay, I want to get all these, and felt really the connection immediately. It was as if someone had named exactly what I was, you know, feeling like I wanted to do. I wanted to serve. I wanted to really support people and, you know, really help process grief and try to make meaning of things and try to help keep peace, wherever I could, and reduce harm. It really felt like, gosh, I really want to do this. And now there was this illuminated pathway, I would call it. It really felt like that in a really wonderful way. It was like a glowing doorway, way to take the things that I was doing and trying to help with folks in the world, support, you know, just the phone calls and the caring and the hearing and the listening, you know, the supporting. I mean, that was a wonderful work and needed. And I was, happy to do it. It was needed. Gosh, this is hard to talk about. And, now this was a way to offer it to extended people, right? Families in Israel, you know, who were directly affected by October 7th, who absolutely lost people that day. And these are people I didn't even know yet. And they were living in this grief directly, you know, at the core of all this. And that's the place I was standing in when Hineni as a project started for me. I was not an outsider looking in, and not as someone at the absolute center of the blast radius either, but someone in between, close enough to feel the shock of it, right, through the people that I love and know. And far enough that I had some capacity to show up and actually do something, right, to bring some love, bring some resources. And, it's that in-between space, that liminal space where I was as a person. That's exactly where this project found me. I mean, it's like, and Hineni means here I am. So that's what you were feeling. That's what I was feeling. So before this project, you know, for folks who do know me, and if you don't know me, my relationship with Israel, started, you know, when I was young, and really grew here with Hineni in a deeper way. Beyond this present moment, there's some history. I have family, friends, professional and academic colleagues who were born and raised in Israel, right? Growing up, Israeli culture was just part of the air in one of my family homes. I had a few family homes, and, you know, I would get Ashkenazi in some homes and then Sephardi in others, and that was often connected to the Israeli side, was the Sephardic culture, as well as a Mizrahim culture. I do have family members who spent time in diaspora, right? As we talk about Jewish people being outside of Israel and then making their way to Israel, either by force or by their own fruition, right? It's always a mixed bag. So things like food, music, television, you know, radio, Hebrew conversation, mannerisms, you know, the nonverbals, like all that great stuff was all just present in that space, you know, 80s, 90s to now. And I grew up hearing firsthand stories about my Saba and my Savta, my grandparents, their escape and journey from Iraq to Israel. The way they left, you know, the things they carried, what they had to leave behind by force. I heard about the Six-Day War, the Yom Kippur War, the Intifadas later, and the many, many peace talks and agreements full of hope that were signed, and they just sometimes crumbled after that for all kinds of reasons, praying for that. There was no, you know, these weren't like abstracted events that you'd find in a history book. They were stories told at tables or at the beach or at, you know, the park or something, or just talking in the living room, you know, with pauses in the middle where someone had to catch their breath. You know, these were real things to hear. And even though I didn't know these people directly, you know, when you hear someone speak about their own grief and share that with you, that's a job, that's a role, and that's a duty that we have as human beings to each other. Even as a kid, you know, learning and capturing and collecting and feeling. But, you know, by 2024, my connection to Israel and global Jewish art had already then taken on another life since October the 7th in 2023. That year, I showed my work 2024 in the Jerusalem Biennale in an exhibition celebrating Jewish illustrators and graphic designers from around the world. I met so many of my illustrator heroes there, just people that were just amazing to just absolutely connect with. I met Alex Waz there. I met Alejandro Galat there, Hillel Smith, who I had known but was now meeting in person for the first time, Yehoshua Hooper, I met there, Steve Marcus, I met there. I mean, just amazing, amazing, amazing people who I just admire their work. That's a much longer list, so if you ever get a chance, you should look up the Jerusalem Biennale 2024. Iron Flock is the name of the theme. And then that's Archie's work. And then We Are Jewish on Paper, which was the amazing show. And so that was a really amazing thing, getting to do that. And I thought, wow, for the first time, like I looked around in that opening, right? And just meeting all these people, I thought, wow, okay, I'm in the conversation. This is cool. I really felt for the first time, like being so far away. You know, I don't live in a giant Jewish community in the Southeast. And you know, I grew up in New York, so, and I've been to other Jewish communities. I've seen how intense they are, how big they are, and they're wonderful, beautiful. You know, I come from a smaller one. So feeling now like, wow, you know, like my little place in North Carolina here, I can have a voice, and it's a part of that dialogue, which really felt beautiful. So when the Hineni project came into my life, it didn't feel like I was really starting from zero by any means. It felt like I was like now going on the next turn of a very long and winding path. And for all this to make any sense, I should probably explain to you guys what the Hineni project actually was and is. It's still going in a few forms. So Hineni was a collaboration between many of the Southeast Regional Jewish Federations and the Partnership 2, Number 2 Gether connection with the Hadira Iron region in Israel. So if you know Israel, Hadira Iron is north of Tel Aviv, north of Netanya, but south of Haifa. It's kind of right in between that that area right there. Beautiful, beautiful. Caesarea is in that space. Katsir, Binyamina, Hedera Ron, all that wonderful space. Very artsy there. Kind of felt a little bit like Asheville or like, you know, kind of West Village-y in some spots, you know, not as dense, but had some funkiness, which I thought was super cool and a lot of fun. Very much like South Florida artsy towns or some Southern California type of arts towns, just a lot of fun and warm and loving and you know, wonderful and up and coming. And so families in Israel who had lost ones on or after October 7th, you know, related to that, were paired with artists from our region here in the Southeast United States. So myself and my colleague, Tara Spill, who's an amazing, amazing painter and Charlotte artist, was the second artist selected here in Charlotte. And then there was folks from Nashville, folks from Jacksonville, Savannah, Charleston, and a few other places. And forgive me for not having the exhaustive list, but really cool. A lot of folks I didn't know and weren't connected to, I was now connecting to in my region, which was great. We all had this one focus mission to connect with Hedera Aron and to make this beautiful project. So the idea was simple that they proposed, but also like very heavy at the same time. So the agenda was that we would be paired with a person who had been lost. And then we would meet their families first through email and then through Zoom in these very wonderfully facilitated conversations. It'd be, you know, a lot of listening, sharing, and then I'd have to create a piece of art or some kind of project that like allowed us to capture and hold, you know, the grief and support them. So many settled on portraits or other things. Some people did some abstract work, which was super cool as well. You know, great way to represent things. So this was the process that I now was going through. And, you know, with an assignment like this, when you say yes to it, like you feel it in your chest, like, okay, wow, this is big. You know, this wasn't, yeah, I'd done portraits before, even for folks who had been passed on, you know, as remembrances and things. This wasn't like a kind of a distant memorial gesture. You know, this was person to person, directly. Many meetings, connections, getting deep, showing drawings. Right, we were asked to show up with open eyes, ears, and hearts to these meetings. You know, just listen and absorb. Our job was not to try and fix anything, right? We're not here to offer advice. We're not licensed counselors or art therapists, even for that matter. Our job was to bear witness, to honor, and to create something that said, okay, you are not alone, right? We see you. We are with you. And my match was Bar Schechter. Bar was a young father, a husband, son. He was a psytrance DJ, right? That's electronic music, and psytrance is psychic trance. It's very kind of repetitive electronic music. Definitely spent a lot of time listening to it as a young person. I connected very much so. And you know, on October 7th, Bar was murdered by Hamas at the Novav Music Festival in the Negev Desert while he was doing what he loved most, playing music, you know, making people happy, dropping the beat, you know, doing the things that like make live music by DJs incredible. And Bar is survived by his amazing wife, Yara, and their two children, and his Ima, Sabine. You know, when I was really thinking about putting all this project together and everything, I always have this image of Bar, you know, at his decks, right, at his turntables in front of him, and just a crowd, and like, and I see this, and then like it shatters. It's an intense thing. Yeah, I never got to know Bar in life. I met him in the aftermath, through the echoes of who he was, through his very few audio tracks online, through pictures that I found and those shared with his family, and then through the words of the people who knew him and loved him. Hineni asked me to step as a project into that space, very carefully, to let the stories of the family and the friends really guide the work instead of my own assumptions. This wasn't necessarily a design problem for me to go in and fix. It was I had to be there to be the support, right, and to act as an extension of the family. I really had to, we had to connect like that. And that framework there shaped everything that came after. So I didn't go through the Hineni project as just an individual, wandering around with a sketchbook. I went through it in my community, surrounded by this beautiful, strange, and wonderful crew of people who each carried their own story and creative superpowers, frankly. Couple of folks to mention who really connected with Tina Ritchie was one of the first people who made me think, I'm really glad I'm on this journey with you. Tina is an amazing comic book artist, published out there, does amazing work. And Tina has that rare ability to make a drawing feel like it's mid-sentence, like the character's about to say something to you, so compelling that you want to hear. They just have this look, and her work carries humor and heart, but also this quiet observational depth. And man, can Tina wield color like a demon. Tina, you kill it. Just fantastic work, and I think did a wonderful job capturing the essence of their person that they were paired with. That person was a surfer, and she did a fantastic job just capturing them, almost like Endless Summer. If you know that movie poster, go ahead and Google it if you don't know what I'm talking about. It's that famous poster of the surfer guys, with the neon colors. It's silkscreen style, really great. So watching Tina draw online, she posts a lot of great stuff. I keep thinking comics are really they're really theology disguised as jokes and panels. I've always found that to be really fascinating. So Tina is somebody y'all should check out. Tina Ritchie, Tina Isola Ritchie is her full name. I'll put a link down in the description for y'all to check out. And then there's Samuel, Sam the Man Hammer. Sam is a weaver and a retired science professor. So we get to talk about college teaching and all that fun stuff. And he gets me excited for retirement one day. Sam already, when you hear the sounds already, he's got a great story. He has this heart of gold energy, one of the most Hasimcha, full of joy and kol kavod. He, whenever we chat, he's such an inspiration. He's this kind of person that listens fully before responding. He lets it work and process in him, and he's amazing at that. And he can talk about fibers and physics and the bloodstream and all these things without making anything feel weird or you can access it all. It's wonderful. His presence on the project, just it really felt always grounding, having a wise camp counselor and a curious lab partner, right? All in the same person. So love you, Sam. You're the man. Another person that was very instrumental was Ellen, who comes from the same area as Tina, out in Tennessee, another Southeast Regional Federation artist. And Ellen was actually a familiar face to me before the Hineni project. We had collaborated before in between those two times, right, from October 7th until that point. A lot of connections and friends were made, and Ellen was one of them. And seeing her in this context, it felt like running into an old bandmate on tour in another country, like, what you doing here? Ellen's an amazing graphic designer. She's got a sharp eye, really just a strong sense of visual structure and visual culture. She knows how to make the image connect and stick. The way she thinks about layout and type hierarchy, she's really amazing at creating these like quotes and things connected with art. Just it was awesome. And she did a fantastic job with her connection and her family that she was connected to with Hanani. So it was awesome, having somebody there that you kind of already know and already knows how your creative brain works a little bit. And it just made for like a good exchange. We were able to kind of help push each other during our group critiques and things like that. And just having that familiarity was great. So always wonderful, right? The small world of the Jewish world to then be even smaller in the Jewish art world. That's just that's a beshert. That's amazing. Meant to be. Really cool. And then there's my homie, Tara Spill, a Charlotte friend and an amazing Jewish painter, runs the Charlotte Plein Air group. Awesome. And knowing someone from your hometown, right, also adds another layer. You got somebody and then you got somebody from home. Tara's works really carry a lot of Jewish themes and spirit that she uses with color and texture. And they feel like really contemporary and also very traditional and rooted, which is wonderful about her work. She loves capturing people in these moments, like even if they're like giggling at Shabbat or things like that. Very candid, very real, direct. Sharing this experience with Tara and others was cool because like now we could bring that back to Charlotte, and like together kind of share our perspectives and share that with the community in a meaningful way. And it's great, we've been able to do that, like been able to translate the Hanani experience to our community and have work to show. Tara was connected to a family that had lost a son who was a soldier. So she made his portrait, of his unit. He was like a really great, I remember from her telling the story, he was really great at getting people in his unit really excited and pumped up, or like, excited, but like ready, focused, like positive, like we're going to do this, we're going to be great, we're going to do it effectively, cut down on people being hurt. He was the guy who was always looking out for everybody. That's what Tara shared about what his family said. So she did a great job capturing that in a painting that like felt alive, like I mentioned. This was really cool. We also had some Israeli friends who we connected with, Mark, Karen, Katya, Tova, all wonderful people who live over in the Hadera Iron region. Mark's an amazing sculptor. He's been doing it a long time. He would look at a wall or a crack in the sidewalk, or like something in public. His brain, he'd start to like, oh, that'd be cool. That'd be cool to make, Mark and I got a chance to, when I visited, Hadera Iron, to walk around and tour things. We went up to Akko. It's an Arab majority city in the northeast or northwest of Israel. Wonderful. We met some of Arab artists, friends of him, Arab Israeli friends, who were wonderful. And we had a afternoon. We went and got some hummus at this like world famous hummus place. It's like all they sold was hummus. You come in, sit down, eat hummus and pickles and tea, and it was wonderful. So really great to connect with Mark. Karen, she's an Israeli a painter. Her work felt like super plugged into the culture, the Torah, and just the idea of living in this beautiful place. Katya is a painter, and she's also a community organizer. She's a fellow muralist. We've been talking about doing some collaborations. She doesn't just make art, but she's also amazing at building spaces and allowing people to like come in and use creativity as a way to create strong connection. So I really love how she puts, the community into what she does. And Tova's amazing, just has incredible skill, and just like an experienced artist. And yeah, we just we loved all of our core group of folks here. We met on Zoom. We critiqued each other. You know, we'd support each other. We had a WhatsApp group as well, so we'd share things and whatnot. And then, you know, when I did visit, one of my favorite memories with this group was going to a really cool place in Hedera-Rum called the Stables. And it's like this artsy area that's built on like a stable grounds that were, you know, no longer. And it was really funky and cool. You had like tiny shops, almost like a bazaar, you know, like a shuk type of a space, but for artsy things. And the, you know, the vendors are tucked away in kind of all these little corners. You know, we ate there, we wandered around, there was music. We looked at like the different handmade items and pieces. I bought like three mezuzot there, mezuzah for my doors while I was there, and scrolls. I mean, you can get it all. It was amazing. You know, I really felt like this moment was like really being with my people in every sense. You know, like we were artists, we were Jews, we were travelers, you know, each of us taking in this place in our own way, but together as a group. And you know, these are the kind of people you want around when you're trying to make honest work, right? About real people and real places, and you want to really be there. You know, this is, you know, as far as like a, you know, a social practice goes, like you want to be embedded and really well connected with your community in authentic ways. And I think we did really good here to set up opportunities for high quality experiences with each other as people. I valued that in a tremendous way. And you know, the community there was, it just, I felt welcomed. You know, it can sound generic, like, oh, I felt welcome, but this was like concrete welcome. These were like now faces, names, conversations, food, stories. You know, you could feel that these weren't just people going through the motions. You know, they opened up their lives to us. You know, we got very real, and we did that very quickly. So that was awesome. You know, so standing there and being connected with you know, Tina, Sam, Ellen, Tara, Mark, Karen, Katya, Tova, and others, really, really just wonderful. You know, Ravid, Shimrit, who are our P2G hosts and the directors of the program. I mean, they were wonderful. They were there during our conversations. They took us to the stables and you know, allowed us artists to really have that space to connect. So, yeah, I could really feel, you know, how this, how Hineni and the broader partnership together, you know, they weren't just frameworks and schedules for, you know, get us to do these things. It became a living relationship. You know, it was forming in real time. It's like you can only create the conditions for that. You can't make that happen. You know, you build the sandbox, and like the fun has to emerge, you know, or the experience or the creativity has to emerge. So yeah, I mean, this is what it looks like when art and friendship and history all braid together. It's a beautiful, beautiful weave. So the detail that caught me first was about Barr was that he was a psytrance DJ. So that landed very quickly for me because if you know me, I love electronic music. And I've painted at festivals before and spent many money and hours at concerts, you know, 90s, 2000s, and even more recently. So I love this stuff, you know, like I've had samplers, I've bought those things, you know, I've had drum sets, beat makers, like yeah, I love it. Okay. And you know, there's something about it that feels like really expansive and emotional without ever needing words. The music builds, it stretches, it carries you somewhere else, it falls out, and you're like, where'd it go? And then it comes back. And there was one time while I was working on this, I was like, I gotta hear Barr's music. I would love to do that. And I remember asking Yara, his widow, hey, do you have any music of his? And she said, oh, you gotta search online. There's mixes people have like recorded and things. And you know, Barr wasn't the best at that, but you know, look, you'll find something, you'll find something. And I totally did. I found something on SoundCloud. It was like a mix of something that somebody had recorded of his. It was like Bar Schechter live at so-and-so fest. And I was like, whoa, it was cool and ethereal and about 90 minutes long, which was like, you know, perfect for getting into studio flow. So yeah, I queued it up, I hit play, and as it started to unfold, the music, I found myself not just listening, but moving, but dancing a little bit. I was like, okay. I danced a little bit between Paint Strokes project I was working on, and I made the stanky face, you know what I'm saying? Like you kind of make your lip and you furrow your brow, you know, and you kind of knock your neck forward, you know, and the beat and the groove just hits, you know, like all the good spot, like that's funky, you know, like the spots in your brain, you know, and it's just, it's all fire and all cylinders. It's wonderful. So I was into it, needless to say. And yeah, I look around, suddenly my studio is not just my space. It felt like a big shared space. Like I was at a concert and painting, and it's awesome to do that. I painted at electronic music concerts, and when, like, you know, the music's hitting, wow, like people are like, you know, come up. Of course, they always say weird things like, I love art, you know, as they're absolutely out of their minds. But it's such a cool experience because everybody's feeling this like synergy, and it's, nobody's talking. It's just all being led by the music, and that's wonderful. And dance and expression, I mean, just all come to a head. Like everybody's serotonin levels are like, ah. So it was amazing. And yeah, you know, I sat kind of just sitting there thinking like, man, Bar, you know, what would have been like to have known you in real life, man? Like, would we have been friends? Like, would we have, I feel like it, we would have, I feel like we would have, you know, collaborated, man. I would have done your visuals, brother. I would have made the animations for your, you know, man, that would have, we could have. Yeah. So, well, my brother, we get to do this in this life. So here now, this way, the best way we can, you know, back to my studio here, you know, and thinking about that question, you know, the music filled the room, and you know, I was working on different drafts of Bar's portrait, and you know, I worked a little bit with paint and pencil and drawing, and then did some digital. I do that sometimes if I have a painting and I want to see like, oh, if I did this, I don't want to try it on the canvas and waste paint. So I'll take a photo of it and I'll bring it into Procreate or Photoshop, and then I'll paint there to see, oh, do I like this, right? Like, is it going to feel good as a composition or whatever? So that part of the process was cool, you know, having the music being able to kind of slide back and forth. And like, you know, all of a sudden the music started to become part of the process. You know, it's like there'd be a shift, you know, Bar would mix something and it would be like the beat and the melody would be kind of going more directly towards, you know, building up towards something big. And I'm like, okay, here we go. You know, and I'd start to work that in like, all right, here we go, shading on the face. And that would be, I would sort of synchronize those. So that felt really cool. And the, you know, the rhythm, I would start to paint brush strokes like that, you know, thinking like, oh man, I should bring in these little rhythm points. You know, what does a side trance beat paint stroke look like? You know, that was starting to enter into my mind space, you know, in my hand. And the energy of these tracks just, you know, start to push decisions, and you know, start to feel like, well, I'm not really driving here, am I? Something else is happening that's making this really amazing. You know, I felt like I was listening. I felt like I was really hearing. And, you know, I started with the sketch and building into paint. And I had photos of Bar. I started to kind of piece. I was like, oh, I love the way his face is here. He looks so serene and calm, and he looks so happy, you know, and just trying to find like that smile of his that I kept hearing about. And, you know, just the mix of like calm and intensity that lived inside his eyes. I mean, when you look in this man's eyes, I mean, you feel like, man, you feel loved and cared for, but at the same time, you feel like, man, this guy's about to kill it on the decks. You know, he's about to just play music that's just going to like move this crowd and take us on a journey and then bring us back later, you know, and then take us out for food after. I got that vibe. And then, you know, the emotions came in waves. I felt like some days, you know, almost guided. You know, the music was really helpful. Conversations were helpful with friends and the family. And then other days, I just feel stuck, you know, just painfully aware that like no art can ever be enough to fully capture Barr's life, you know, who he was, his spirit. You just couldn't do it. I felt so defeated. You know, like I'd put the drafts out and I'd say like, man, is this real? Is this a real person or is this just a design? You know, did I create a persona like I would for a UX project? You know, is Barr somebody who's going to use my app or consume something I'm creating, a project or whatever? Or is this a person, you know? And I got to be honest, sometimes I felt like, man, this feels like a design. You know, like I knew I had more listening to do. I had more work to do. And I didn't know what. I just had to trust in myself that this wasn't yet. The loop didn't close yet. So I made the work and, you know, we had the show, and it was fantastic, you know, like, in many ways, but it not yet, friends. Here's where things get a little interesting. So in last year, in September of 2025, I got the opportunity to fly to Israel and I met Barr's family, and this changed so much. So, you know, after the many months of speaking on Zoom, I went to Binyamina in Hedera Aron and I met Yara and Sabine. And, you know, being in the same room with them, like, felt like, wow, like this is so different. Yeah, I was like, there's so much more information coming your way in real life than in these conversations, you know, that you have on the computer or the phone. And, you know, it's like, we got to say so much more. I got to pick up on so many nonverbals. And then, you know, even silence has a whole new meaning because you can hear and see the person, you know, there's still information coming and you just, it's a wow moment. So I got to hear all about Barr growing up as a kid, you know, causing trouble, you know, just how his interests started, how he experiences in his life that were formative, people he loved, you know, places he would love to go, his favorite foods, his shows, like just all the things about him in his life. And, you know, learning about him as a father, about, you know, just how he cared about making people happy. Barr was famous for his hugs, that I learned. And, you know, I just, you could watch their faces much more closely as they speak. You know, when Yara's speaking and Sabine's looking at her, you can see Sabine's face and understand, oh my gosh, what's happening here is amazing. You know, there's layers, there's grief, of course, there's pride, there's, you know, in love, like all lived together in these stories and this experience. And I also got a chance to speak to, I didn't meet in real life though, unfortunately, some of Barr's really closest friends who also worked on the project from the Israeli side. You know, their memories that when we spoke added other layers, you know, different things that friends can share, you know, jokes and stories and road trips and small details that, you know, that never make it into like the official biography or, you know, that friends know, you know, when you're blowing off steam and whatnot. And, you know, and I didn't want that, like this piece was just going to be about tragedy. I didn't want that to be the thing that it screamed, you know, like that would betray who Barr was and is, right? His memory still alive, still with us. So I'm back in the studio and, you know, I turn Barr's mix back on again, right? I've got this one great mix and it's a 90-minuter. So it's a good one, right? To like really help with workflow. And now, you know, something shifted in me, right? Like I wanted to do something more with this portrait. It was awesome that I had gotten to a good place. You know, it was printed as a 24 by 24 size piece and shown in these different places. You know, it was paper. It wasn't like really an original. It didn't have an aura like I wanted to. And, you know, the image that I came up with, friends, I'll share a link to. It was so great. You know, I Barr had this big head full of dreadlocks, and like when he would DJ, he'd, you know, either tie them up, you know, to whatever, but they're always bouncing and flying around. And I wanted to just show Barr kind of like in this moment, you know, like imagining above his DJ tables, just like, you know, with his hands out, just commanding the crowd, like, dance with me, you know, be in the love. And man, I putting a rainbow like a spectrum in the background, I felt like joy, you know, and a little bit of biblical layer in there, a little bit of a promise, you know, Hashem's promise to Noah in Genesis. And I wanted to give Barr that level of ancestral connection. And I always heard that he had big hands, right? Perfect for DJing and twisting knobs and throwing mixers and plates and decks. And Barr's hands stand at the bottom open, right? Like just kind of like welcome, you know, and the dreads are flying and he's got a big giant smile on his face, like almost like welcome and come on up and I'm going to give you a giant hug with my music. You know, it kind of had a Bob Marley feel, you know, if you've ever seen Bob Marley kind of dance on stage and get into an ecstatic state, it had a vibe like that, you know, which was cool. So the spirit of that was really there. And I didn't want to just canonize him or you know, kind of smooth out the edges, you know, like these things do that when you make portraits, you elevate the person, you idealize them, you know, they become almost like a heroic realism type of thing. And but for me, I wanted it to be about joy, about generosity, you know, about the love that everyone spoke about. Every person who I spoke to about Barr, love. Just that this kid, this guy, this man loved in this like uncanny way. It was just absolutely there. And that like that was critical. I had to have love show up in an image somehow, you know, like, so through the gesture of his body, through the color, through the excitement of things, you know, I wanted all of that to be there. And, going into kind of the next stages and meeting with Sabine and, you know, connecting there, I thought like, you know, man, we got to do something with this. So before I left, I had some weird idea. And I said to Yara and Sabine, I said, guys, I really want to do this as a mural, like a community mural, like bring out the kids, bring out everybody who loved Barr, and let's do another, because they had a beautiful celebration for them with DJs and food, and yeah, it was great. But I didn't get to go. But something in his hometown where he was born, and really just capturing all the beautiful things about him in that space. I think that's really, really critical. And would y'all be, first of all, like, is it okay? Can I have your blessing to do this? Some permission, please. And then second, would you participate if possible? Okay. And of course they were like, oh my gosh, yes, this would be amazing. We would love to do that. And I just thought like, oh man, this is it. This is, you know, I pitched my idea and, you know, like doing a mural. Okay. You know, I've done that stuff before, but doing it internationally in this way with such a profound meaning, just, it had to happen. What was the worst that would happen? The answer was going to be no, if I didn't say anything, but it was a yes. And, you know, this is where I felt like once I started speaking about this, I told the P2G group, they started helping me. I told my federation, they started helping me as well, the other artists. This was just amazing, right? So I felt like, wow, I put it out into the universe, and now this was going to be what would happen. And just as I was leaving Binyamina and seeing Yara and Sabine, Yara comes out and says, hey, wait, I have something for you. So she gives me a sweatshirt, and it's this like, it's one of those like super sweatshirts that's like fits beautifully and has the nice zip up and is super warm. And of course, we're in Israel in September, it's hot. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know, put this on. Oh man, like this thing was such a wonderful Yara said, we told you all about Bar's hugs. When you wear this, this is what it is. It's a hug. And printed on it is Bar's image on the back. It's the artwork that his friends had created. Beautiful. And then with angel wings kind of covering the sleeves on this black t-shirt or a sweatshirt. And then on the pocket, it says his DJ name, which is Sai Lupo, which is so lovely, right? Sai for Psytrance. And then Lupo, which is his nickname, his DJ nickname. And yeah, I mean, but this wasn't just a piece of clothing, right? I now wear it all the time. And this is how I carry Bar. This is how I carry you, man. Even last fall, I had sent Yara and Sabine a photo of me on WhatsApp where I was wearing the sweatshirt on top of Cadillac Mountain in Acadia National Park up in Maine. And it's beautiful, beautiful scene. And it was cold enough up there in the fall that that sweatshirt was perfect. And since then I've been taking Bar with me on hikes all over the place, quietly, like a companion that's st woven, stitched into the fabric. Really, really amazing. So the project now has been spoken into the universe, and I absolutely want to make this mural happen. So this idea started to crystallize, and I said, I really want to put Barr's image in his hometown, not just on walls and galleries and other places, but in his hometown, right in the center of town. And through the help of the partnership and the family, we were able to get this beautiful, beautiful wall. Somebody who knew Barr, who has this like amazing space in the middle of town, literally in the center of town in like a rotunda. It's a kind of a curved wall, said, y'all can have it. So what I had thought of was now like, this will become a vision. So I wrote a proposal and built the annoying stuff like a budget and a timeline and materials list and started to look at opportunities for how the community can get involved. I started writing impact statements, like KPIs, all these things. And I just sent the proposal out in every direction, federations, sponsorships, people in Israel, folks that I knew like who would be interested that would be willing to support. And I'm trying to do this to make it real. So right now, right, there is a wall in Katsir. It's there, sitting, waiting. And my dream is that like, and I wrote about this in the proposal, I imagine a kid in Katsir walking past, even a few years from now, looking up at Barr's face and asking like, man, who was that? Right? And someone saying or information saying, that was Barr. He was a DJ. He loved people. He loved music. And he was ours here in Katsir. I want that question and that answer and everything about that to be Barr's creative legacy. And the plan is clear in my mind. I want to fly to Israel and make this thing happen. Meet with the family, the community, get kids, we'll get them out of school for the day, and over the course of a week, lead a mural production. I'll put the lines up and everything, get all that stuff set up, and then have folks come out, give them paintbrushes, and say, let's make Bar happen. And I'll work with the community with the placement, and that sort of thing. Of course, I've proposed my image of Bar, and I think a lot of people are excited about that image. But maybe if community input wanted to happen, maybe we could add some things to it. Like I'd totally be okay with that. In fact, I'd love that because then the work would evolve. I've done my piece that we did for Hineni, and I feel like this is now so much bigger. That's the thing. It's like it's not for my glory. It's not just like, oh, there's my piece and my creative vision's intact. Great job, Mike. Artistry badge unlocked. It's I want the community to see themselves in it and make that full circle connection, and then even build new connections for people who will see it in the future. That's really important, and I want people who put brush to wall to feel that contribution factor that they did something in that space. That's really, really important. And you know, it's important to say that the process of it all will be the tribute, you know, just as much as the final image will be, you know, the artifact of that. Y'all, this is my kavana, right? This is my focused intention on this. This is the stuff I'm putting out into the universe that I want this Hineni and the portrait of Bar to turn into. Okay, it's my dream. And, you know, one day to stand in front of this wall in Katsir and use color and light and community all around, right? And help bring Bar's joyful, loving presence back into the heart of the place that birthed him, that shaped him, right? And I know, this doesn't fix anything, but maybe it can create a space where love and memory live in public, where grief isn't something we lock up and hide away and don't share with others, and where partnership is literally painted into the landscape. Hineni, right? Here I am. Not just once for Mike, y'all. It's something that's again and again and again. And friends, that'll do it for us. This was the Jewish Futurism Lab. I'm Mike Wirth, and I'm delighted to share with you about my project for Bar Schechter. May his memory be a blessing, and may this mural, Bezrat Hashem, come to life. And if you're in Israel, we'd love to have you there. Come help us. Until next time, y'all. Take care.